Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Coco Express, part of the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your host on the Coco Express is Aurelia Lyles. She's all about keeping it real. Great guests, interesting topics, so get on board. Listen, learn, live.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Coco Express Show for Saturday, October 5th, 2013. I'm your host, Aurelia, and we are definitely live. I am truly hoping that you are out there enjoying this beautiful weather. If you are in a place where there is beautiful weather, we have been given an infusion of some additional summer weather, and take it when you can get it, because when the winter hits, it's a deal. That's done. Today we have an especially amazing show. We have with us, joining us, Jay King and his group Club Nouveau. Now, Jay King, when I think of him, I think of impassioned empowerment. And the heart of the matter for him is Club Nouveau. He is a music entertainment mogul. He is a businessman, a mentor, and an advocate. And he has done some amazing things in the industry that has pretty much paved the way for, I guess you could say, a legacy for our artists going forward in the future, which is something that in the past was not done. And oftentimes you've heard of a lot of instances where a lot of these artists got no recognition, they didn't get payments for the work that they did, and they worked so hard. And he has been instrumental in ensuring that these things are set in stone and in place for them. I don't want to go into too much more of discussing him, because I would love for him to tell his story. And joining us will be Valerie Watson and Samuel Prater. They are all part of the group Club Nouveau, and I am so honored to have all of them with us today. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Jay King.
Yes, how are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. Yes, Mr. King, it is indeed an honor. I am just so, I guess you could say, blown away by your accomplishments and all that you've done. And it's not that you've done it just for yourself, but you've done it to empower and aid and assist future artists. What inspires you, and how did all this begin?
Well, first I got to say I haven't done much of nothing. You know, I mean, this is a work in progress. And, you know, you know, it's a wonderful thing for me to be able to say, yeah, I did this and I did that. But really, we are truly a team, the group. And then because of the freedom allowed me by the group to advocate and to speak my mind, especially at a time when, in our business, artists didn't have that kind of voice, and it definitely wasn't promoted for us to speak out against record companies or for each other or have any kind of connection with each other. I was allowed to do such a thing where the group that I was with trusted me and my instincts enough, even to the detriment of them at times, because, you know, I fought against my own record company for what I thought were inequalities and injustices, and sometimes I was dead wrong. This is a business, and you can't bring your personal emotions into a business, which is what I learned, you know, being a young man involved in the music industry on the level that I was involved in. You know, before there was Jimmy and Terry, before there was L.A. and Babyface, before there was Leor and Russell, before there was Puffy and Andre, there was I, you know, with in 1986 is when I did King J Record. I did the deal with Warner Brothers, and you know, after doing Rumors independently and selling, you know, 3.5 million singles independently without a major label, but to say that I did it by myself or that this was my thing and that I had this great plan and I knew exactly what I was doing, if I sat on your program and said that, I'd be telling you a damn lie. You know, none of that would be true. I just, you know, I have a wonderful mother, Helen, who was just a giver and a compassionate human being who really allowed me the freedom to be an individual when I grew up in a neighborhood, you know, that already had plans for us, and none of those plans had to do with anything successful as it relates to, you know, aspiring and dreaming. You know, you know, we grew up in working-class neighborhoods where, you know, you got a job, you work for 30 years, and that's the way the Tootsie Roll. And my mother allowed me to dream and to aspire. So there was the culmination of things. It's not just any one thing or any one situation that made it happen. But, you know, and then God, you know, when you know that you've been given a lot of opportunities and, you know, and some things you blow, you know, God, you got to pay back. So what I do in the music business as far as sharing information and helping everybody else, other artists, God helped me, and there were people that helped me. You know, I didn't just walk in and just understood this stuff. It was Randy Rand and John Brown, two older gentlemen that were pioneers in the music business, especially the independent music business, that helped me. Both of those men have since passed, but both of them were very critical and essential to my growth in the music business.
Okay. Now, you mentioned briefly about your childhood. What was it like? Because you just don't want to fight for what you believe in. You have to have something ingrained in you. You have to have been taught something. So what was it like growing up?
Well, first of all, I grew up in Northern California. You know, you had the Black Panthers. You had Oba Tshaka, Angela Love, Angela Davis, Khalid Abdul-Mansur. You had the Pan-African organization. You know, I grew up as a revolutionary, really. And, you know, I grew up in the 60s. I'm 51 years old, so I'm born in 1962. So, you know, I'm at the, I'm right there during the civil rights struggle. I read a lot. So I watched this country. I read a lot about this country. I read a lot about who we are as, you know, as spirits and souls and power. And when I say we, I'm talking about African Americans. And just, you know, how forceful we are and how strong we are. And I'm in awe of the power of African Americans. The fact that we, you know, every time the game changes, because every time we get to a certain point, they change the game on us. And how we're able to, you know, reassimilate ourselves and, you know, recalculate and recalibrate and get back in the game again. And then the game changes and they change the rules and then we do it again. And my mom was just a very proud woman. My mother had her first baby at 15, never finished high school, you know, went to college, graduated with a 4.0 magna cum laude, and ended up teaching the class she graduated from in nursing. My mother could have been a doctor. She was just a brilliant woman. My father, you know, was just a strong man. So I think, you know, it's just a culmination of things. The kind of friends you have, the kind of environment you live in, the kind of teachers, you know, teachers really cared about us at that time. So, you know, and then what you decide to hold on to, you know, as a human being, I was just telling somebody, you know, we individually pick and choose the world we want. If we want a world of positive, good, uplifting things, then we got a right to, we have the opportunity to build that. If we want drama and chaos and craziness, you know, we have the right to build that. And, you know, it's up to us individually what we choose. And I've just been taught that for a long time.
Amazing. You have also, well, you have made notable strides as a dancer and a rapper. What happened to the rap career?
Well, you know what? First of all, you know, it's funny because I do my own radio show, and sometimes I play the song called "The Battle Beat," which is a song that we did. And it's, you know, I was never really talented enough to do much of anything. And even as it relates to this stuff, I always tell people I'm the least talented person in Club Nouveau. I'm just a really hard worker. So, as a dancer, which is probably what I was best at, you know, popping and breaking and stuff. And, you know, you grow out of it. You know, you get older. You know, you move to the next level. So each thing moved me to the next thing. You know, dancing moved me to rapping. Rapping moved me to writing. Writing moved me to singing. And, you know, and here I am.
Well, you've been moving. You've been doing a different kind of dance. You never stop dancing. Your dance just turned into a different form of something as it appears.
Yes, that I agree with. I always tell, you know, I just believe, you know, even if we live to be 80 years old, you're only living 29,200 days. By the time you take away 8 hours a day for sleeping and 8 hours a day for working, you have 9,300 and some odd thousand days for living. And then you got to ask yourself, you know, how many of these days did I waste? How many of these days was I young and vibrant? How many days was I, you know, was I old and decrepit and mean? And then you got to reevaluate your life and say, I'm going to go after this thing and I'm going to live it. And that's what I do every day. You know, if I die right now today, if anybody cried, they'd be a damn fool, because people that know me would be like, Jay is living. I get up every day to live.
That is amazing and beautiful at the same time, because a lot of people spend time looking at what they didn't do when you have so much time left to do that. And the fact that you are saying, you know, I'm here to live, that's amazing. That's profound.
Now let me ask you a question. Do you see a 510 number on your
board?
Yeah,
he's right here sitting here listening.
Oh, okay. And did you see, is Val, did she make it? Because Val was sick.
She's not here yet, so
Val was sick. Val, I think she got the cooties from one of the kids.
Oh, I know about those. They'll be okay for one day. You'll be knocked out for a week. So I understand that. Now, we're going to get into the club. I just wanted to get a better understanding of who you are and you know, and the members of the club, because of the fact that you've accomplished some extraordinary things. For example, you set up an independent label coalition to manage and oversee and negotiate all aspects of business and for independent labels. Now, what made you decide to do that? Because it was necessary.
Well, let me tell you what happened. You know, it's so funny, and I scared the hell out of the music business. I just got to tell you, independent distributors didn't know what to do. And I didn't know how powerful it was when I did it until later on, because, you know, I recognized exactly what we were able to do. But I did it because of Rodney O. This is funny. Rodney O from Rodney O and Joe Cooley, Everlasting Bass. Rodney had an album out called F New York. He had a song called You Don't Hear Me Though that they had already released, and it did okay. It didn't do great, and Rodney was getting ready to sell this album to a group called PAR, this organization, and they had sold about 40,000 units already. And I asked him, why would he sell his record? I said, Rodney, you sold 40,000 units. Why would you sell it? He said, man, I just want to get the money, get out of it. This record is over with. And I said, no, Rodney, I think this record is great. He said, man, I'm tired of it. I said, then let me take it for you. Let me manage your label, and let me show you that you got more sales than this record. And it'll be yours. You pay me a percentage, and I'll oversee it. He said, man, if you want to do it, you can do it. So I took You Don't Hear Me Though, and I put it on a B-side of a song called Humps for the Boulevard. And I serviced it to radio. And Hump for the Boulevard became a big hit on the West Coast, and KMEL and Power 106, which are two huge stations, started playing. This is 1992. started playing a record. And when they did that, the record got so much momentum that both singles charted. So the only rapper in 1992 to have two singles on the chart at the same time were Dr. Dre with the Chronic album, songs from the Chronic album, and mm-hmm. Rodney O from the F New York album. We ended up selling 380,000 units. And from there, I said, you know what? I need to do this for a lot of different – there's a lot of different kids out here making these records, and they're going to give them to these guys, to these corporations that are going to take these masters and own them. So I started the Independent Label Coalition, and then I did Domino's, Ghetto Jam. I did 69 Boys, Tootsie Roll. I did Gary Taylor's Square One album, got him out of his deal. And Gary Taylor was the one of the first smooth jazz guys to do independent records and be successful. We sold over 100,000 units independently, and it's to this day, it's the biggest record of his career. And Gary Taylor wrote Good Love for Anita Baker, Just Gets Better With Time, and My Heart for the Whispers. He wrote for Layla Hathaway. He's written for everybody. He's an accomplished songwriter and producer, but he's a great artist. To me, he's like the male Sade, because if you like one of his albums, you're going to like them all. They all are alike.
Wow.
Like Sade.
Okay. That's amazing. That is just amazing. Now, you, in addition to that, you have kind of put yourself in an arena where you were able to televise domino tournaments. That's interesting.
Well, because I'm a domino player.
Oh, okay.
And I got tired of music, to be honest with you. I did a deal with Universal and Thump Records. I did a classic R&B division, and I got Bootsy Collins and Lenny Williams, Ready for the World, The Emotions, Club Nouveau, Gary Taylor, Howard Hewitt, a lot of different artists, you know, to put out records through this entity. And I put out the first three or four records, and they didn't do what they told me they were going to do. And, you know, I own 20% of it. So basically what I did, I sold my portion of it, got out, and said, I'm not going to be in music anymore. I quit music. And so in 2005, I quit music for 3 years, 4 years, and did Domino. And I did a deal with ESPN, Deportes, did a deal with Domino's Pizza, and a company called Fundex Games, started doing high-stakes tournaments around the United States. And, you know, we were giving away $30,000 at each tournament, $10,000 first prize. We had one guy won over $100,000 playing dominoes. We did 14 tournaments a year. We did it for a couple of years. And one of my sponsors that were giving us $1.5 million, they were an online gambling site off the coast of Costa Rica, and the government shut them down. So we only got a $500,000 of money. So all the money that I had, well, I sold my publishing, I sold my stake in the classic division that I made over there with Thump, and you know, I sold whatever I could because I knew I was going to need, you know, a couple of $3 million to have set to the side to help me, you know, and it, once a couple of sponsors fell out, we used that money, and we never picked up any sponsors. It didn't grow fast enough. We thought it would pick up like poker. We didn't get enough players to play, and, you know, unfortunately, I had to go back to making music, and then I fell in love with music all over again. I got the bug, and here we are. But I am going to do tournaments. I want to do special one-on-ones and stuff like that. I want to do tournaments for television.
And that would be great.
Yeah, but I love dominoes. I love the game of dominoes. It's a very it's a game of critical thinking, and strategy. It's not just scoring points, like people think. It's a serious game.
What is your horoscope sign? I'm curious.
I'm Aquarius.
Oh, adventurer. Okay. Great. That explains it. Now, we're going to get into the heart of the matter, okay? And it is quite apparent that the heart of the matter is Club Nouveau. That's your heart.
Well, you know, from a musical standpoint, absolutely. It's the voice that I have to say what I want to say, what I feel, and politically and otherwise. And I really, I get the opportunity to use great voices with Samuel and Valerie, to make my point. So that's what Club Nouveau is for me. It really is my my opinion, politically
and socially and spiritually.
And the wonderful thing is that Valerie and Samuel, we are spiritually in line with each other, and we always have been. But again, I take a lot of risk and chances, and when you have group members that trust you enough to say, okay, we're going to, because what we're doing is totally different musically than what the world is doing right now. We're not doing anything that sounds like, that sounds like what the music is. And so Val and Sam trust me enough to say, let's go for it.
Yeah, well, I'm going to play a little bit of rumors so that everybody can get, we can refresh their memory. And then we're going to talk to Samuel a little bit about some things. And we're going to talk about the visual images of your videos, because those are very, very powerful images. So let's start off with rumors. Then we're going to do Lean on Me. We're going to talk to Samuel. And we're going to get into your new single that you have out. Okay?
Wonderful.
Great. Club Nouveau come about? I know this was done by Timex Social Club, which eventually became Club Nouveau. How did the whole group become a group?
Well, I was producing Timex Social Club. And really, there was never going to be a Club Nouveau. But the guys in Timex Social Club went behind my back and did a deal with somebody else. And so the project that I had, I was creating for them, I just had. And so Denny and Tommy, me and Denny were really working together. And then Denny brought in Tommy. I brought in Val. And then Denny brought in Samuel. And we formed Club Nouveau to create, to continue with the music that we had created and that we were creating for the Timex Social Club.
Oh.
And that's why I wrote Jealousy. We wrote Jealousy to really tie us off together, and to tell the story of Timex Social Club and how they went behind my back and did what they did. Those staff suckers.
And Samuel, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. Now, tell me, how was it for you? You know, when did you start your career in the industry?
Well, in the industry, I started in 86. And that's when what Jay was just saying about when they decided to form Club Nouveau. Denzel, which was a high school mate of mine, and he called just out of the blue one day. I was headed up to Davis Black Family Day. They used to call it the Greek Day up there in Davis. And the phone rang. And it was strange because just like a week prior to that, you know, rumors was, you know, had blown up super big. And then a friend of mine told me, you know, that's Denzel, right? You know, that's Denny. That's what we call him. And I said, Denny? He said, yeah, you know, he's part of that production at that time. You know, rumors thing. And I was like, wow. He told me he was going to call me, you know, when he was like 4 years older. You know, I was a freshman. He was a senior. So he told me he was going to get into production. And he knew that I sang. So he was like, man, when I produce one day, I'm going to call you. So the first thing that came to my mind was, oh, man, he told me he's going to give me a call when he started producing. So not even a week had went by. And I was getting ready to walk out of the house. The phone rang, and I'm like, man, I don't want to answer the phone because, you know, we're getting ready to head out and have a good time at the big barbecue up at the college. And I just decided, you know, hey, you know, let me grab it real quick. It can't be that bad. And when I answered, it was Denny. And before I could even get into it, he just said, hey, man, you still singing? And it was just, it was strange. And I was like, wow, we just talked about this. And I said, yeah, why? He said, I want you to meet somebody, which was Jay. And I want to try you out on a song. You know, so he said, what about Monday? And this was like a Friday. So over the weekend, you know, I didn't think much of it. I said, oh, you're going to try me out on the song. But, I had to tell everybody, man, I was just getting ready to talk about that boy, too, for not calling me. And he called. He said, I met Jay. And we went to Denny's mom's house in Pomona, California. And I met Jay. You know, I didn't know who Jay was at the time. He just, you know, just introduced me, like, hey, this is Jay. And Jay said, hey, you know, do this for me. And it was like, I think it was situation number 9. And he was like, yeah, let me hear how you, you know, say this, say that. And, you know, so I just, you know, did the, you know, here I am stuck in this rut again. Ooh, I don't know what to do. And then Jealousy, he gave me like a line of Jealousy, and it was almost like an interview, right? You know, I didn't know what they were thinking, you know. And so he said, okay, cool, okay, all right. Yeah, it was nice meeting you, you know. So I left there thinking, like, I don't know, you know, was I good, was I bad? So I think it was that following Monday, I guess Jay and Denny had talked, and Denny said, hey, man, we're going to be in the studio. Now, at this point, I had been singing my whole life in church and in my dad's quartet group and stuff like that, but never a studio. You know what I mean? So I was like, what, a studio? So we went to Alameda, and we did Jealousy. And from that moment on, I kid you not, it seemed like everything happened in 3 weeks. It was just like, okay, we recorded Jealousy. And while we were recording Situation Number 9, Jay was like, okay, it was like I came in. They brought me in while the wheels were already rolling. So I did, you know, it was just like, boom, we recorded one. We started working on another one. Before we even finished that one, it seems like Jealousy was on the radio. You know what I mean? It was just literally like when people say things don't happen overnight. At the time I came in, it seemed like it happened overnight. And to hear yourself on the radio for the first time, You know, and then right after that, they was like, hey, we got shows at these colleges. You know what I mean? It was just like bam, 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 bam. Next thing I know, we recorded an album. Jay came to us and said, hey, Warner Brothers wants to give us a deal. I mean, literally, it was happening like that. And Warner Brothers. When I told my mom and them I had signed with Warner Brothers, they laughed at me like I was crazy.
Really?
They cracked up. I was only like, you know, I just made 18 at that time. I wasn't even, you know, I was almost like a year or so out of high school. So they looked at me like, boy, get out of here. To my side, Warner Brothers. They had company over the house. I said, hey, I just didn't deal with Warner Brothers. They laughed at me so bad. I said, yeah, this guy, J.K. And my mom and them cracked up. And I said, hey, we got a song on the radio. They said, boy, get out of here. I kid you not. And then the song came on the radio. I said, hey, there you go, right there. And then they heard the song on the radio. Then they looked at me. I, you know, at that time it became real. But for me, it was like, you know, it was like, but when you hear people say when they win the World Series, where you going? Going to Disneyland? It was like going to Disneyland, Disney World, I should say. It was an awesome ride for me.
That is excellent. Now, working with Jay, what has that been like? Because he has mentioned several times that you trusted his instincts and you trusted his decisions. How has that been for you?
Well, it felt like a concentration camp. No, I'm just joking.
No, they probably did feel like that.
No, I'm just kidding. But you know, I'm gonna tell you when the excitement of being in the studio outweighed the fact that I didn't like. I grew up I could imitate anybody. You know what I mean? Because that's all you know. When you grow up and you're not a professional singer, you grew up singing a bunch of gospel, imitating Peebo Bryson, Teddy Pendergrass, James Ingram, Marvin Gaye, everything that was on the radio. Of course, Sam Cooke, which was my all-time favorite as a kid, because my dad played him back in the 8-tracks back in the days when we used to take our summer vacation drives to Louisiana. So Sam Cooke was my all-time greatest. But it was just like I didn't know what my own sound was until we got to Club Nouveau. And, you know, it was like, okay, that's cool. Now let's hear what you sound like. You know what I mean? It was just like I didn't have an identity on what my voice was supposed to sound like. So when we were doing the song, it was like, okay, I'd come in one time, I might sound like this person. Next time I do the line like this person. And then Jay was like, okay, now that all sounds good, but now we need your sound. You know, so it wasn't easy. It was fun, but it wasn't easy at first. You know, mm-hmm. to go in there, and then I had to figure out who I was as an individual, you know, my vocal sound, what kind of style was I going to, you know, what kind of ad-libs do I do, that kind of thing. But the excitement outweighed the difficulty of that. But after about the third, you know, after about the second one, by the time we got to Lean On Me, it was a wrap. It was like, okay, I knew, hey, just sing from a feeling and don't worry about, you know, get out your head, everything you've known, and just start singing.
Okay,
and, you know,
great.
By that time, but you know, between him and Denny, which was they did, you know, pretty much the vocal productions, and then to have Val, you know what I mean? Val was a great help too, because you know Val was a, you know, she was a vocalist also, so she had been singing, I'm pretty sure, her whole life too. So you know, when you're singing and playing off somebody, that always helps too.
That is excellent. Now, you talked about Lean On Me. I'm going to play a little bit about Lean On Me, and then we're going to talk about your solo career and the lessons learned. Okay? Great. Now, Lean on Me received international acclaim. How did that feel for both of you to know that this song just kind of, you know, the Bill Withers hit kind of took off the way it did?
Well, I got to be honest with you. For me, personally, I never had time to deal with any of that part of it. And if it's any part of my career that I wish I would have had the opportunity to experience, it would have been the part of having a hit record and then and being able to relish in it. Because I did a lot of the work. I did the business part of it. So the battle, I was involved with the battle of it. I was involved with fighting the record company all the time. And there was always some type of fight for a record company, especially for a new group like ours. You know, the Black Division didn't want to release Lean On Me at Warner Brothers. They didn't think it was a hit record. And then for a Black group to have a record release on the pop charts was kind of unheard of, especially if you didn't have any success building up to the pop charts. And, you know, Situation Number 9 was number 4 on the R&B charts, but it never crossed into the pop charts. Jealousy was number 8 on the R&B charts, but it never crossed into the pop charts. And those were the two singles that were out before Lean On Me. So for Lean On Me to get the kind of recognition it did on the pop charts, you know, for a major label to do that for a Black group is going to be kind of tough. So I was battling record companies all the time, our company, to for them to respect us as, you know, musicians, respect us as business people, because we, you know, because basically we manage ourselves. There was no, I managed the group, you know. So, but, you know, so we were, you know, we were in control of everything that happened from an image standpoint, who did our videos, everything. And so it was a battle. It was a battle for me. So I didn't get the opportunity to really appreciate it the way I appreciate it now. I'm sorry for taking so long, Sam. But
that's all right. You know, because mine is short and simple. For me, it was great. I literally had a, you know, like I say, it was like a big vacation, dream vacation, because, you know, we traveled everywhere. You know, we stayed at the nicest places, you know, because of the way Jay did the business end of it, we made, you know, tons of money. You know, everybody was, you know, at a time very close-knit family. You know, we laughed a lot, played a lot. You know, we traveled on tour buses. I mean, for me, it was literally like, hey, you know, here's our itinerary for the week, and all you got to do is just do what you do. You know what I mean? And, you know, you stay at luxury hotels that you never would have dreamed of staying at, even though, you know, the best hotels we ever checked into was like we didn't end up staying overnight because, you know, we had to be in another state the next morning. It was work, but it was fun. You know what I mean? Just to show up, and sometimes we'd hit the stage and look at each other and say, where we at again? You know, before we can even, you know, give a shout out. You know what I mean? Jay was like, we in New Orleans. No, that was last night. No, we're in, you know what I mean? We're in Macon, Georgia. You know what I mean? It was, literally, you just traveled so much to the point where Jay would start flying a lot of times because, you know, like you said, he was doing a lot of the business. And, you know, when I think about it, yeah, he didn't get a chance to really, you know, soak in the, let's go down to the hot tub, let's go down to the pool, you know what I mean, go over to Jamaica, because we had 3 days, I'm not Jamaica, but the Bahamas, we had 3 or 4 days off for a change, and we get a free trip over to the Bahamas just to do nothing, you know, that kind of stuff. So he was so busy, you know, trying to make it happen and seeing to it that it happened. He didn't get a chance to just play like we did. You know, he didn't get a chance to be 20-something-year-old, guy with a lot of money, you know what I mean? He, because of the business end of it, and because of him is why we were able to, you know, have the playtime that we did. And so for me, it was awesome.
Now, Jay, you mentioned the visual aspect of the video, and who you said you were totally, you were all in control of the visual imagery, and a lot of your videos reflected your love and understanding of the world around you and your love for your community. Now, who directed them?
Well, you know, Ken Ross and Richard Levine directed Lean On Me, Jealousy, Why You Treat Me So Bad, Oh Happy Day. Peter Nigel directed It's a Cold, Cold World, For the Love of Francis.
envious. You ain't no friend of mine. When will you come back to me? What kind of love? You know, so, but both of them, brilliant, brilliant. The funny part about Peter Nigel is Warner Brothers accidentally sent me the Peter Nigel reel because he never directed a video before. But what they sent me was a bunch of beautiful footage. And I called Warner Brothers and I said, for the second album, I said, I want this guy to direct my videos. And they said, well, he's not a, no, he's not, James, we sent you a wrong reel. He's not a director. He doesn't do videos. That I don't know how, and I said, I don't care. He's doing my videos. And they were like, well, no, he can't do your videos because he's not a video director. I said, he's doing my videos. I love his imagery. So I got into a big old thing with him, and I just called my lawyer and said, hey, you need to let Warner Brothers know that I'm in control of this, that I get to, that I control who do my videos. So that's how Peter was able to do my videos. So between Peter and Ken, all of the Club Nouveau videos were made with the exception of two, Situation Number 9, which is the video that gave me control over all my videos, because once one of us put that crap out, and we almost didn't, remember that, Sam? We almost didn't do that video. We hated the concept. We weren't going to do it, but we ended up doing the video. But after that, Warner Brothers gave me complete control over the videos, and then a song called Ghetto Swing. But other than that, which was another horrible video that Doug Green did, but Peter Nigel and Ken Ross did the what I think are the prolific videos of Club Nouveau, with the strong imagery, with the, you know, with a lot of the social commentary in it. And so Ken Ross is doing the video for the new single, That Ain't Love, because I knew that I knew it was going to cost me more money. I knew that that it was going to be different than any other video that's in the marketplace. And I knew that we needed somebody like a Ken Ross visionary because of the strong imagery and the social commentary that Ken was going to put in this song. And, That Ain't Love is our first single back in a while, you know, with a full-length album. We haven't had a full-length album since 1995. We've had some collections. The collection Volume 1 that came out in 1998, 1999. We had, Alec collections came out in 2001 and 2005. We had some greatest hits albums, but we haven't had a complete Club Nouveau album until now. And I know that the imagery has to go with the album and what we're saying. You know, the album is called Consciousness for a reason. You know, it's not just a title for us, it's a lifestyle for us. And in the world we live in today, the only way this world is going to make it is if humanity develops some consciousness, because all we have to do is look around us to see where we're headed, not a good direction.
You got that right. You are so on point with that. Now, before we get into the new single, I wanted to ask Samuel about his solo career. What was that like? And when Club Nouveau went on hiatus, what did he do?
Well, my solo career, I mean, it was, again, for me, it was great, because having coming off the experience of being with Club Nouveau, and being used to being on stage and doing things of that sort, and then to have a song which went number one is on the dance pick on the Billboard. You know, then the video, Tyra Banks was in the video before she was even a major model. She was just kind of breaking into the business, doing, shows. And it was, for me, a nice ride. The first song was the first song I got a chance to really write, have some say-so and, some arrangements and things like that. And to have that be the one that, Sylvia Rome at the time, who was, president of Atlantic, picked that one. She really liked that song, said it's going to be the biggest song of the summer, it's going to be a number one hit. And to see it, actually come true again, it was awesome. it was, like I said, my times and, coming off of a ride like Club Nouveau, You know, I did miss, you know, you miss the crew. You know what I mean? You get so used to being a family on stage that you do miss, you know, your family when you get on stage, and that was me. You know, it's just like, okay, you look to your left, you know, where's Val, where's Jay, you know what I mean, where's everybody? And you go, whoa, this solo thing is, you know, you really got to work because it's about you, you know what I mean? And I never was really a show hog, you know what I mean, where it's all about me. It's fun when you can play off others like that. It's fun, you know what I mean, when you're up there and, you know, sharing the spotlight and, you know what I mean, everybody playing off each other's energy. You know, I was used to that. So, you know, once it became about me, it was like I had to, you know, get into this me type thing, which really was uncomfortable for me because, you know, everybody would tell you that's not really my personality. You know what I mean? You know, I like laughing, joking, and things like that. I don't, you know, I don't have to be the life of the party. I don't have, you know, everything is not about me. So once I kind of, that's the one thing I didn't really like about it was because even if it's not you, you got to, you know, you have to portray that this is you. You know what I mean? Some people do it well, but that wasn't my strong suit. But I just said, hey, just let your voice, your talent, and your personality shine. So then once, you know, I got that down, again, it was awesome. You know, it wasn't long-lived because I didn't have any, you know, once they heard that song, So You Like What You See, you know, that song was such a, the DJ used to say, man, when I put this on, watch. You know, you go by the clubs after you do a performance. They say, watch the dance floor. And, you know, people would be dancing, but as soon as they put that on, you couldn't even see the dance floor anymore. So, you know, to be able to see that was awesome. And I was like, wow, you know. So, again, I stayed on and high. I never had anything bad experiences when it came to the music business at that time. But, again, then once I was solo, I didn't have Jay, you know, making sure that, you know, I was paid, you know, the highest pay, you know, the best deals, you know, constantly, you know, moving forward. That was the most negative part about being solo because, you know, my first ride was all I had to do was show up, you know what I mean, just do my thing. But now I have to be more concerned with, you know, how many units am I moving? You know, is the product in the store? See, I never had to do all that before. You know what I mean? Is it selling enough? Am I going to get a royalty check? And I never had to worry about all that stuff before. You know, it was just about go do your thing, have a great time, and, you know, just enjoy. But then I realized, wow, so, you know, with this and this and, you know, questions I had, nobody wants to answer. You can't go in there and argue with people yourself. And I think I pulled a little, I think I became Samuel King when Sylvia Roman, you know, she called me and she was asking me, you know, so Samuel, you know, she called me personally at my house, how's it feel to have a number one record? And I pulled, you know, I pulled a King move, couldn't catch myself. And I said, well, it feels silly, you know, to have a number one record, but is it retailing? You know, I'd heard that so many times from him that I just knew it was a pertinent question. And I think at that moment, I guess I didn't sound grateful enough or whatever, but before this, he loved me. After that, it was like, you know, I could just tell it was a difference. Like, hey, this guy's not in it just for the fame. He really wants, you know, he's smart enough to know that there's supposed to be some, you know, some retail numbers. There should be product in the stores. I'm going to record stores, and you'd have a line outside the door, and I get in there, and they have none of my product. And I'm supposed to be signing pictures, CDs. You know what I mean? This is what we did in Club Nuevo. We got there, we was, you know, they're buying CDs, you signed CDs. They had your pictures, you signed your pictures. I got there, I went to a few major stores, there was no product in the store. None. And you got lines all outside the door. So that is when I had to start, you know, being a little Samuel King and start going, hey, this, you know what I mean? I'm smart enough to know now that this ain't the way it's supposed to be. You know what I mean? In other words, the guy at the store is telling me, hey, man, I've been having people come in for the last couple of weeks looking for this. Won't send it to me. You see what I'm saying? So now I know, hey, this is, you know, you got a number one video, a song on the radio, and you ain't got no product. So that means you ain't selling nothing. You're missing opportunities. And that's when the Samuel King part kicked in and started asking questions. You know, they don't want you to ask no questions. So I started seeing at that time that it was, you know, they didn't have my best interest at heart. And that's when I requested. By the time we just had finished doing the second album, and I asked Sylvia again. I said, Sylvia, so what's your ideas for my promotion? You know, what kind of you know, before you release the single, all that matters, what kind of ideas you got for this thing. And they, you know, when I heard her say, well, you know, we're working on that, but we're going to release the single, and then, you know, we're going to figure it out. And I was smart enough to know that because of being with Sub Nuvo and being around Jay and them, is that you don't release anything without a direction. And, you know, I mean, all those things that have supposed to get in play with a major label, there's departments for that. So in other words, they were just kind of, you know, and Vogue was hot at the time, you know, so it was just like they didn't really have any plans for me. So all I saw was, you know, they just going to keep releasing stuff, and if it don't happen, they'll put you on the shelf. I knew that for a fact. So I got out while the good was good and said, hey, you know, I wanted to, you know, leave Atlantic. I said, you know, hey, they, you know, if this is all they're going to do. At the time, I had a management, David Lombard, and I told him, I said, you know, hey, Dave, go in there. He said, you know, he goes in there and fights with him. So it became a more of a problem than I was, you know, than it was worse. So that's when I left Atlantic Records. And after that, you know, I had a daughter in 1995. So, you know, that became, you know, my daughter and my daughter's mom at the time, that became my world. So, you know, I always did music. You know, you always sing. You always, you know, work out, do personal training. I still did all those things. I even did a little independent film called Peepers with IndieImage.com, IndieImage movies at that time. So I kept recording. I mean, I did some music. I did a little production on some little local hip-hop guys, but I always sang and record. And then I learned how to arrange songs, how to, you know, produce songs from beginning to end over all that time that we had off. So, you know, it was a growth process, and it was amazing how God put us all back together, and we're all in the same season right now, as Jay was saying earlier, you know, spiritually, musically, and even business-wise. We're all in the same season right now. So I believe, you know, it's Club Nouveau's time to once again do what we did before, you know, with this consciousness. The timing's right. Jay's had these songs for quite some time, but, you know, it's in God's time, not our time. And they just, you know, it's funny to see Jay's look on his face knowing that he had these songs, you know, already for a time that people weren't receptive. But right now they're very receptive because of what's going on in the world. So, again, I think we're getting ready to take that joyride. But I think this time, I think Jay's going to enjoy it this time.
Oh, wow. That's really amazing, because you learned some valuable lessons that help you grow as an artist and as a business person. So, and you also realize how much you learned while you were with and under the guise of Jay King. So that's
exactly.
That is a testament in itself as to being part of a family, a really close-knit entity that had your best interest at heart. And those things that you can't buy, you can't do anything other than appreciate the fact that God had put you all together and have brought you back together again. That's
exactly.
A beautiful
yeah.
thing. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was going to say, you know, what's funny is that even, you know, somebody had called us once about doing this show called not Life After, but what is that show?
Unsung.
And, yeah, somebody called me and said, you know, I would love to see Club Nouveau do a Unsung. And I said, I'm never going to do an Unsung. They said, why? I said, because it's too much tragedy. Unsung isn't about the best of your career. It's about how you were a certain way and then things happened and it fell apart. And I said, well, I don't have that story. You know, Denny and Tommy, you know, left Club Nouveau to become producers, and that's what they did. They were successful producers. Samuel did a solo record. You know, that's what he did. He was successful. Valerie does solo records, and then she come. You know, we all did our own thing. And we don't, there's no discord with our group. Even when Samuel wasn't in Club Nouveau, and it's funny because the version of Lean On Me you played is the version with Walter. Samuel texted me and said, that's not the right version. I said, I know that. I wish they would have called me because that wasn't, you know, that wasn't the original version. But what I did, and just so that you guys know, I tried to license my records from Warner Brothers, but they wouldn't license them to me, so I cut my own version to make my own greatest hits. So if you could buy a greatest hits album, they're albums that we own, because Warner Brothers, because once an artist leaves a record company, 5 years after leaving, they can recut everything that they cut with that label, and the label can't do anything about it.
So I started recutting all my hit masters so that I could compete with Warner Brothers. And when somebody wanted to license music for a film, for a television, for a commercial, instead of paying a high price for Warner Brothers, they could play a more competitive price with me. And, and artists don't necessarily do that all the time. And I remember when the Tonys were doing, they were called for It Feels Good for a car commercial. And the company was trying to buy the song from Universal, which owned Polygram. And I told Dwayne, don't let them do that, man. Cut it yourself. Sell it to them yourself. And you guys are going to still make a lot of money. You just won't make as much money as the record company. But if you let the record company do it, you're not going to make any money at all because they're going to do it against your old debt. And he did it. And they took it. And so the version of Feels Good, which sounds just like the version that they did because they were the ones who did it in the first place. The record company didn't do it. You know, that's what you heard in that TV commercial. And they made goo gobs of money by licensing themselves. And that's what we do. We really own and control the majority of who we are and what we do. So we went back and we cut other masters with Samuel, the old masters. We recut them with Samuel. We recut Rumors with Samuel. We recut Thinking About You with Samuel. But we got a lot of new stuff that's going to come out over the next 18 months. And then from this time moving forward, we're going to have a new Club Nouveau album out every 12 to 15 months.
Okay. Oh, that's good. Now, and speaking of the new album, the new CD that's coming out called Consciousness, you have a single out called That Ain't Love. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay, so let me say this first. The single's not out yet. You guys are actually getting it before it's even out to terrestrial radio.
Ooh.
But we understand the power of the Internet, the power of Internet radio, and the future of Internet radio. So with that, the single, That Ain't Love, you know, is about relationship. And sometimes a relationship will look or sound a certain way. And we got to remember that that ain't love. And so this song is that relationship. You hear how the man talks to the woman. Samuel is doing that part. And then you hear what Val thinks the response should be from the woman, to the, you know, like schooling the woman, so to speak, on if this is happening, that ain't love.
Okay.
And so it's a very interesting song because the hook and Val's verse are connected to each other. And so it's written unorthodox, but I like the way the song came out. I think Val Samuel did a great job.
Okay, so we're going to play That Ain't Love. And when we come back from that, we're going to discuss Val. She's not here, but we want to learn more about her as well. So you guys are going to have to be the ones to tell her story. Okay?
Yeah.
Great.
This is a song about love.
Yeah.
But it's not a good love. It's not a real love.
Oh.
And if your love sounds like this, then that ain't love.
When I work, putting hard days, that's how I keep these bills paid. At my crib, things go my way. Don't give a damn about what your girlfriend say. When I come home, ain't no way in. Should have my dinner on my plate and clear the table when my meal is done. And break me up, girl, when I want some.
Girlfriend, don't let him emotionalize that. You pay your own bills, got your own car, got your own grip, you got it like that.
That ain't love.
He can cook and serve his own damn meal. And if you don't, some other trick will. Walk away with your girlfriend. Better yet, you better run, cause that ain't love.
See, in my house, that's how it's gotta be. Knew I was thugging when you met me.
so you know that I don't play around.
Well, I know that.
Girl, don't make me put my Mac hand down.
You better step back.
If you want me to be real with you,
get real.
You better do the things I tell you to. So don't be tripping, just respect
you
me.
You gotta respect.
'Cause in my house is how it's gotta be.
Girlfriend, trying to run a game on you.
Listen here, ain't no talk back. Ain't got no time for no tit for tat. Girl, you know I'm where your place is at. So you better recognize that. See, I'm a player from the old school. And in my house, it's just the same old rule. So don't be tripping, just respect me. 'Cause in my house, that's how it's got to be. You love me, baby. I've been good to you.
I still hear the reason for your tears. Mind you let them treat you so
don't
bad.
Don't let nobody
don't tell me
play
I'm
you
mad.
For a fool.
Think about leaving. Think of the leaders.
Don't
get on the dance and
decide. 'Cause then you're proud
love. And that's
my
love.
That's my
very interesting. I like it a lot. Very truthful.
Yeah. That ain't love.
Oh, yeah. Now, we haven't had an opportunity to discuss Valerie Watson. Tell us a little bit about Valerie. You know, she is a songwriter, arranger, singer. Let us know a little bit about her and how she fits into the dynamic of Club Nouveau.
Well, you know, Valerie's mother and my father went to third grade together. That's how far back our families go. My father's 74 years old. Okay, so that's how far. Valerie's like my little sister. And when I was working on Timex Social Club, Valerie was going to be in Timex Social Club. And before we could get started good and get her on any records, we broke up, and then I brought her in Club Nouveau. Valerie was going to Stanford at the time. She's majoring in mathematics. And so Val, you know, she had so many different voices inside of her. Even now when I work, I'll say sometimes I'm like, Val, I want the pretty girl, or, you know, I want the fat lady, or, you know, I want the sassy girl, because Val really, that's how, you know, that's and really Val gets a lot of freedom to kind of play different positions in the song, you know, and I give her a lot of longitude to work. Which Samuel, you know, I basically give Samuel a melody, and then I let Samuel work it out. And Sam really stays in a nice structure for me, and he's really the anchor to the song. But Val is the color to it. He's always going to do the colorful stuff, and. It's funny because Val is about 5'1". She probably weighed 103 pounds, but Val is really strong. I mean, you know, when we'd be out on the road, Vinny and Tommy, bigger guys, they'd be sick all the time. Valerie never got sick. You know, Valerie is my right hand. She's just through everything. She was with me, you know, with family. Even when she didn't agree with me, she was with me. I introduced her to her husband, met him, and said, I met your husband today, and they fought for a year to try not to be in a relationship with each other. They ended up having four kids, getting married, having four kids and everything.
But Val is really a very loyal, down-to-earth, cool chick. The girls love Val because Val is the kind of girl that is so comfortable in her own skin, and she's so humble, and she's just kind and nice. You know that about her, and she's funny, and you can't let her have a drink of wine, not even a sort of little bit. You get a sip of wine, and Val. That's it.
She turned into a 1985 J. King when she had a little glass.
Yeah, she turned into Laquan. Something like that. But Val is cool. You know, she's not on the call, but she texted because she missed the interview. And what's funny is that when they started doing these interviews with us, you know, I noticed that I was the only one on the interview. But one day I called the publisher, why are Val and Sam doing these interviews? They said, well, no, nobody told us. I said, we're a group. You know, come on, you know, put the group in. And so we make this, so then we get Val and Sam, so we're doing these interviews, and Val don't show up for none of the damn interviews yet. And I saw the other day, I sent her a text. I said, hey, Diva, you can't show up for interviews? Then she sent me a text back and said, damn, sick. So I know she's not feeling well. But Val is a art worker. Val is funky. I remember we were on tour, and we played. It was Jonathan Butler, Club Nouveau, and Whitney Houston. And we were in Indianapolis, Indiana. And, you know, Jonathan Butler was great. We came on there, and for some reason, Val was a piston that night. I mean, she was on fire. And the people was going crazy. And then, you know, Whitney came on. We were supposed to do 12 dates with Whitney. We only ended up doing one because they kicked us off the rest of the tour. This is a true story. The next morning, the newspapers, you know, they have a review on the show. And they said, Whitney Houston needs to take lessons from Valerie Watson on how to move a crowd.
Wow.
They said, when she wasn't saying I, me, or my, she was, you know, her show was lame, blah, blah, blah. And they called Valerie Watson the Tinkerbell of funk. They called her the Tinkerbell of funk because Val is this little bitty thing on stage, and she's a bunch of energy, and you would think that Val is 12 on that stage because she's got so much energy. You know, and Val is, you know, she's really you know, just a great team player, a great vocalist. She's a great songwriter. And you know, we all have different musical styles outside of what we do at Club Nouveau. And, like, I Samuel is a classic soul singer. Like he said, you know, and a la Sam Cooke, Marvin Gaye, Donnie Hathaway. Valerie is straight up and down funketeer. Outside of Club Nouveau, I mean, she's got that sassy thing going on, you know, and then outside of Club Nouveau, I'm really just more smooth, more mellow, you know, bossa nova ish, kind of cool, you know, doing my thing. In Club Nouveau, you know, we have to, you know, we have to infuse those elements into the Club Nouveau thing and make it. And make it tight. Valerie is the glue for that tightness. She's really the glue that brings it together. Even right now as I'm working on the new songs, you know, we have a song called Consciousness with Chuck D. And, you know, the song was just kind of laying there for me, and I didn't know what it was that it just wasn't working for me. Val said, Jay, can I just change the melody a little bit on my part? And I said, yeah, do what you want to do. And when she changed the melody, it woke the song up. It's her part woke the song up. And then once she started putting the color on it, I said, okay, I see where this song is going. And then once we dropped the Chuck D verse in, it got even better. And now when I put Valerie's color around Chuck D, I know it's going to be even greater. And so she really is the glue for us, I think. I think for Samuel, she's a great, you know, Sam gets to
thing and do his thing. But when Val comes in and harmonizes with him, I think it takes him, it pushes him to that next level. And I know for sure that Samuel, because Sam was only, like he said, he was only 18 turning 19 when he was in Club Nouveau. You know, he was 18 when we did Jealousy. He turned 19 that November. And Valerie, you know, was 22. And she was more seasoned than a 19-year-old at 22. So for us to have Sam, you know, people say, is that the same guy? I'm like, yeah, that's Samuel. He just ain't 19. He's a grown man now. You know, because people say, man, he sounds amazing. His voice, I say, yeah, you know, he ain't no kid. You know, he was two when he started. So Valerie, you know, Valerie and Sam are a great marriage on stage vocally and in the studio. They're just a great, that they feed off each other. But I think if Valerie wasn't in the group, Samuel would be a different kind of vocalist. And I think you would agree, wouldn't you, Sam?
Yeah, well, I would have to be. It's just like, just like any collaboration. It's just like you'd have to do different things. But when I do my parts, I already know, okay, Val's going to come in and do this, you know what I mean? And once she does that, then I go, okay, now I can do this. And then she can go, well, Sam did that. So I'm going to, you know, we just keep pushing and pushing and pushing. And Jay sits back and he gets to go, all right, that's what I'm talking about. It's like watching two athletes, you know, go in there and just keep raising the bar, you know, on each other, not in competition, but, you know, just basically raising the bar and having a good time at it. And, you know, coming together around the arrangements and things that, you know, that Jay has put together. And again, like I said, I think it's more fun now than it's ever been. You know, even though the songs are not like out, we're not on tour right now and stuff, but the process, because I think, again, everybody is, you know, in the same season right now, musically, spiritually. And I think it's been more fun this time around to, you know, this is just the beginning. And I just can't wait to see where it's going to go. See our next interview. You say, hey, you guys, this new thing is taking the world by storm again. And see what the conversation's like. And then, you know, by that time, Jay's solo album, him and Tony Bennett will both be up for best new jazz, a new smooth. What kind of music is that for Tony Bennett?
Tony Bennett.
Classical?
He's classic jazz. He does a standard jazz standard.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, your album is going to be up against his, your solo album. Jay, you have to hear his solo stuff. It's smooth. It's just like, da-da-da-da-da-da. We rode to, what was that, San Diego? And he had it on, and it was just smooth. I said, this stuff is just jazzy. It's just smooth. So I'm going to place his album up against Tony Bennett next year. The Club Nouveau stuff takes off.
Now, Jay, how can people find you? Because I understand you have a radio show as well. And what other ways can they find out more about Club Nouveau and your other involvements?
Well, they can find us on Twitter at The Club Nouveau. At Nouveau is spelled N-O-U-V-E-A-U. Our website will be up. ClubNouveau.me, and that's N-O-U-V-E-A-U, ClubNouveau.me. It's going to be up in a while. It's not up yet, but you can find us also on Facebook at Club Nouveau fan page. And the radio network is thejaykingnetwork.com, and that's T-H-E-J-A-Y-K-I-N-G, network, N-E-T-W-O-R-K.com. And you can also listen by phone, 347-205-9366. We do a show Monday through Friday called Kings in the Morning from 8 to 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, which is 10, 12 if you're in the Midwest and the South, and from 11 to 1 if you're on the coast. And I do a show called The Music Business, The Way I See It, every Monday and Wednesday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Standard Time. And that's 10 to 12 if you're on the East Coast, 9 to 11 if you're in the Midwest. And we tackle all things related to the music business, everything from publishing, distribution, overseas licensing, anything you want to know about the music business, that's the show you call into. And we cover every subject possible. And anybody can call in and ask any question they like.
Okay, what's that number again? 230?
347.
Mm-hmm.
205-9366.
Okay, great. That's excellent. And I think I know that there are a lot of people who are probably benefiting from your various segments on your radio show as well. So you are still being an advocate via the internet now.
That's what I do. Advocate. you know what? Probably for record companies, I irritate. But you know, I think you know, but I'm also hard on artists. You know, artists have way too many avenues successful out here. There's a lot of information. You can go to Google and find anything you want to find out about the music business, which is different from the business that we grew up in. And I just say to artists all the time, when I hear artists saying things like, you know, hating on me or won't nobody let me shine, I'm like, yeah, you know, yeah, look in the mirror. The person that you're talking about is you. Nobody can stop you from doing anything. You are responsible for everything around you. Energy, success, failure, people, everything around you is your responsibility. So ultimately, you know, you're responsible for yourself. And in the music business, between iTunes, YouTube, social media, and technology, there's no way success shouldn't be any of ours if we want it. But the one thing that hasn't changed about this business is work. The work ethic has to be in you. I'm a non-drinker, non-smoker, non-drugger, non-clubber. I've never done those things. I think a lot of times, especially when it comes to the African-American, we get caught up in lifestyle that is detrimental to success when, you know, or continued success when it comes to this business. It is a tough business to be in and of itself. We already have a lot of things against us in this business, so it's important that we keep a level head, a focus. That's my story I'm sticking to.
So that explains why you look so young, huh? Clean living.
And yeah, I wish I, you know what, I thank you. I wish I did look young. You know what, and I shouldn't even say that because, but thank you is what I'm saying.
Okay, you're welcome. And it's just because I had no idea that you were at the age that you said that you were. So for me, that was surprising because
I'm 51, and that's because people in our business lie. Or they don't want to tell people how old they are, you know, and that's why you see somebody, they're 32 for like 15 years. Now, you know your ass ain't 32. She was 32 15 years ago. How you feel 32 15 years later? And I just agree with it. I just say, you know what, I'm going to be how old I am, and I'm not going to run from it. But I know that in our business, and, you know, these are things that were taught to artists. You know, we were taught to lie to the audience and stuff like that, but we live in the information age. People can find out anything they want to find out about you.
Mm-hmm.
so ain't no need in lying about it.
That's true. That is so true. So, Samuel, if people wanted to kind of pick up with you and see what you're up to, how can they do that?
Right now they can just go to Singing Samuel at Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just Singing Samuel.
Tell them how to spell Samuel.
Yeah, I spell it S-A-M-U-E-L-L-E.
Okay. Not Samuel, but Samuel, yes.
Yeah, a lot of people like to put that mule on there, that mule, which I don't understand, because M-U-E-L would be mule, not mule. Mule is M-U-L-E, but a... You know, everybody didn't take English in English prep class classes. You know, they just kind of run with it.
They might have taken it, but they didn't pay attention.
Yeah, they missed the Macbeth series.
Mhm. Now, how can we find out about Valerie?
You can ValerieEnglish.com. I mean ValerieWatson.com. Is it Valerie Watson or ValWatson.com? I think it's ValWatson.com.
Yeah, I think it's ValWatson.com.
Okay.
Yeah. And also on Facebook, Val Watson fan page.
Okay.
ValWatson. And I sent her a text, so I know she's still under the weather because she hasn't responded to me.
Okay. Then, I mean, I hope she gets better soon. Like I said, I know about those kids' cooties. They really take a beating on the adults. Just get it bad. The kids are fine, but you're still laid out. I know how that goes.
Like I said, it's not like Val. I wanted to go in the studio with her this weekend, but I know that that's not going to happen.
Both you guys be knocked out.
Well, I mean, she got the cootie.
That's what I said. If you see her, both y'all be barking.
I don't get the cootie.
Well, I have to say it was indeed a pleasure having you both on the show, and I would love to have you come back whenever you feel like you want to tell us what's going on, where you know when you start doing your tour, where you're going to be, so fans can find out what's, you know, where they can see you if you're going to be in their area. So I would love that opportunity.
Absolutely.
Well, December 7th, we're going to be in Denver, right, Colorado?
That's right. We're in Denver on December the 7th. Us, a bunch of groups. Midnight Star, the Dad's Band, Evelyn Champagne King. It's going to be a bunch of us. It's going to be a great show.
Okay. And this will be on the webpage when it's up and running. You'll have all that information there as well?
It'll be on our Twitter and stuff. So.
Okay, great. That's excellent. So, guys, it was such a pleasure. I really enjoyed this. I learned a lot. I mean, you were teaching me, Jay, you know, a lot in our short time together, and I appreciate that. Samuel, it was indeed a pleasure, and you too have taught me some things that I needed to understand about branching out on your own and, you know, the pitfalls and the lessons that you learned from where you came from so that you know how to interact better where you're going. So these are the things that I kind of took from that, and I appreciate that so much. And like I said, you're welcome to come back anytime. And just keep putting that music out because I love it, okay?
We definitely will. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you,
Have a wonderful day. Okay. Goodbye.
You too. All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, everyone, that's the end of our show, and I would like to just say this was indeed a pleasure for me because of the fact that I am a Club Nouveau fan, and there is no other way to say it other than they can keep bringing us the music that we love to hear and bring the energy and the consciousness and all the things that they brought to us in the past, because the music industry needs that now. We need an infusion of understanding, which is something that kind of like gets lost in some of the stuff that we hear nowadays. So I can't wait, and I'm sure you will probably be just like me, anxious to hear everything that's going to happen. We will be back again on, I believe, Wednesday with some more information for you. And so just check us out on our webpage. It's thecocoexpressshow.com. We're on Facebook and Twitter. So we'll keep you informed and we'll keep it moving. So please, please, please keep us in mind. Always listen out for what's going on. And I want to thank my listeners for their continued support. We love you. Have a wonderful day. Be well.
That's our show for today. So until next time, keep it real, listen, learn, and live.